Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Just stop by the Crazy Moose Casino in Mound Lake Terrace and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun talking to James Paxton the morning after an incredible, incredible night in Toronto. It's Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. If you missed that interview with James Paxton, we'll play it again for you coming up at 9:30 this morning. So 9:30. If you missed the conversation with the man of the hour, we'll replay it at 9:30 this morning. How cool is the fake shake on the last pitch of the game? That's going to stick with me, man. That is one of those things that just blows me away.
Yeah, I knew it. I mean, I could tell totally.
You saw Zanino shaking
his head.
One of
my first days on the job, right. Salk, I gave you. You thought it was a nod.
Uh-huh.
I was so developed that I was giving you a fake shake, but you didn't pick up on it.
I didn't pick up on it. No, that's on me, I guess. You gave me the fake shake like he gave to Zanino before throwing that final fastball.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the guy who is coaching James Paxton, his pitching coach, Mel Stottlemyre, is also taking a few minutes with us here on the Venue Kings Hotline. Good morning, Mel. Quite a night last night.
Good morning, fellas. It was a magical moment for the big fella.
He's such a great guy for us to talk to. He's really, you know, we've seen him since the beginning, since he came up as a young kid, and he just seems so comfortable, so mature, so comfortable in his skin now. What do you see on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's taken a lot of time. There's been a lot of hype and that's gone with the stuff that he's carried with him over his career. And, you know, a lot of people kind of waited for these moments to show up, and you know I heard Mike Zanino say and Seager say it couldn't happen to a better guy. I mean, this guy is just the time and the detailed work that he puts into pitching and trying to hone his craft and become that guy that everybody has looked for him to be. He put it together last night. So happy for him.
Mel Stottlemyre, Mariners pitching coach. You know, we get little snippets, Mel, and I'm sure it drives, I know it does, coaches and managers and crazy that, you know, we make these opinions off of a broadcast for 3 hours. Or, you know, it's really cool for Mike and I over the years. We've gotten down to spring training, spent some time with you, get to watch you guys work a little bit behind the scenes. You know, one of my takeaways this year, Mel, I don't know why, maybe I wanted to jump to this conclusion, but I was just watching you with James one spring training session. You coached him hard. Like, it wasn't just this soft and everything's great and rosy. Like, there was some, it brought me back to my days of my dad, you know, teaching me how to throw. And even as a pro, like, is he a guy that wants to be coached hard in that way?
You know, he's been a great student. And like all young pitchers or all pitchers that become great pitchers, you know, there's some stubbornness that goes with things, and sometimes young players have a hard time getting over the hump to that level. So, you know, he's always been open. We've put a lot of time into not only his delivery as some other people that have worked with him, but to try to find something that he can repeat and take that great stuff and become a little bit of a pitch maker. And the time that we've put in, that he's put into his approach in building the scouting reports, he does so much work in between. And, you know, like, I put a lot of time in with all our guys and love our pitchers. But James has been really, really special in knowing that if he could ever put it all together and get over some of the hurdles that he's fought and stumbled into, that something like this could happen.
What was the last of those hurdles?
Well, just, you know, I think the last little thing that he has really gravitated towards is his approach and the understanding of getting in good counts. And, you know, I know it sounds like a little bit of a cliche and we ask all our guys to do it, but, you know, he's always had power stuff. And just to be able to have an understanding of how that stuff plays. And this year, you know, we took some numbers and we really went out to try to get ourselves in a two-strike count as quick as we could. And James in the past has always got himself in trouble where he felt like he had to make perfect pitches and nibble on corners. And, you know, clubs have really worked him hard and fouled him off. And the understanding of how to use his stuff back and forth. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at two outings ago and it was his fastball. And he had strike one down in the zone, strike two on a corner, and then at the top of the zone to be able to finish guys with fastball. Last night, that wasn't the case. He had to be a little more precise with his heater. He used his curveball in early and middle counts, and it set his finish pitches up. He put it together last night. You know, it wasn't his most, like, dominating stuff either.
I got a question for you, Mel. I had an old QB coach, Tom Moore, coordinator. Could hardly understand anything he said. But he used to say, "Play smart, not scared. Play smart, not scared." Right? And after I fully realized that play smart, not scared. In some ways, I was listening to your commentary yesterday. Scott, Zanino, we just had James on. For him, is it just the ability to eat and not nibble? Is there anything you yell at him to just let it eat and stop nibbling?
There is, and it's just that. It's like, let it go, let it rip. I think he loves the words, let it rip. And, you know, in this whole process of trying to keep James Paxton healthy, a lot of our bullpen work that we've done on days that he just lets it rip, it hasn't always worked in his favor as far as his work in between. But on game day, to be able to balance that and have his bullpens at like a 70% effort level and still get something out of it. And then on game day, to let it go. Because there's times, if you see early in his outings, he'll come out and he'll kind of feather pitches in at 92, 93. And then later in the game, he'll start to turn the dial up. And I just tell him, I just never want him to have, you know, a lot of bullets in that gun or that ammo in that tank, and to go out and get beat, you know, by still having that. So he's learning. You know, look, this is a guy with great stuff, and he has really learned how to pitch. I'm not going to call him a Greg Maddux or a pitch maker by any means, but he understands the value of getting hit and being in good spots, and he needs to do that being aggressive.
You mentioned a little velocity, and I know you guys aren't obsessed with it or anything, but when you look up in the ninth inning and see 100 on the scoreboard, does that register with you as a pitching coach?
Oh, yeah. I love that stuff. It's I know when he's at its best, and he can't go through a game pitching at 91, 92. And, you know, I can tell you right now, like the adrenaline and what he was feeling out there, he unloaded the tank and he cut his stuff loose. That was impressive. It's the second no-hitter that I've been involved with at the major league level. And the other one was Edwin Jackson. I believe it was 148 or 150 pitches. And we actually had guys up in the first inning. He was walking so many guys. But to do it the way that he did it last night, you know, 99 pitches, and then to be able to empty his tank and show 99 up on the board was pretty incredible.
It's been quite the two-game stretch for him. 16 strikeouts in 7 innings, and then this. I mean, and I'm trying to think of better two-game stretches in Major League history. I mean, Johnny Vandermeer, as you know, threw two straight no-hitters. If he had actually made it to 20 last week, would that have superseded two straight no-hitters?
Well, the 16 strikeouts, what he did his outing before, I thought was, well, for me, was the most dominating stuff that I've ever witnessed on a major league field as a coach. You know, I've watched some Randy Johnson games and some other great games over my career, and Nolan Ryan, but with really one pitch, and he threw a couple curveballs and a couple cutters, you know, in his outing before and his 16 strikeouts, but to be able to do it with the fastball, and then to top it off with the no-hitter. And, you know, leaving out of the bullpen last night, it wasn't, you know, I didn't say to myself, and I always know that if James Paxton can put stuff together, he got a chance to do this. But it wasn't one of those nights that I walked out of there saying, you know, uh-oh, that club's in trouble. Because I've seen a lot of good bullpens of his coming out of a game and going into a game where things have gone wrong. But, you know, the other thing, and I know you guys realize this, but there was a little moment in the seventh inning. I saw James come off the field, and he had a smirk. And I just know as a pitcher, the feeling of, you know, he got to that point, and the defense had just been brilliant. You know, the play that Gamble made with the Russell Martin ball to the track, to Didi coming in and getting the ball, and then, you know, certainly those plays by Seager. You just got to smile as a pitcher, and you say to yourself, it's my night. And I think he come off the field with that smirk thinking, all right, I've got this far. Those guys have made those plays. This thing's going to happen.
It was pretty awesome, man. It was a blast to watch. I can only imagine how exciting it was to be a part of it. Thanks so much for spending some time with us this morning. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. Anytime, fellas. Appreciate it.
All right, there you go. There's Mel Stottlemyre, Mariners pitching coach. After a really just an incredible night, he joins us there in the Venue Kings hotline. A bunch of things have to jump out. I just find myself thinking about the young James Paxton. The guy who we saw come up here a few years ago, who obviously had great stuff, throwing 96, 97 from the left side. They made some tweaks to him along the way. They've moved his arm slot down a little bit, so he's not quite so over the top.
Mm-hmm.
But you remember the guy that would give up a couple of bloops and bleeders? It just seemed every time he'd pitch, it would be like ground ball through the hole. Little dinky flare off the, you know, off the handle that just gets over the shortstop's head.
Yep.
Ground ball up the middle. Ball that bounces off his glove and he's not athletic enough to make a play. Then a walk, and then finally one big hit. And the next thing you know, he's given up four runs in the second inning. And that may have been what happened to him the last time in Toronto.
Mm.
The modern-day James Paxton, as you heard from Mel Stottlemyre, can make pitches in those spots. He doesn't get rattled. He trusts his stuff.
Yep.
He understands that just because he's given up a couple bloops and bleeders, he doesn't need to change his approach and all of a sudden start to nibble. He can just go right at guys.
I don't know why.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't know why.
That's maturity.
For sure it is. I'm trying to think if there's a kind of a correlation to maybe those listening out there and competing different things. And golf is the natural one because a lot of folks listening right now golf. You know, men, women, everybody can golf. And it's like when you play with that guy that can't hit it like you. And Paxton, I'm sure early on, is like, man, there are very few that can throw it not 100 miles an hour, right?
Right.
I can drive at 350, but I'm playing with this slappy over here that hits at 200, and then he hits it on the green, and it's par, 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 par. And I'm like, birdie, bogey, birdie. And I'm looking at my scorecard like I should be just pounding you. And I'm not. And there's like a frustration. That guy gets in my head, and I lose. You know, and just some of that maturity to stay within your lane and that unbelievable focus and be so dialed in.
Yeah.
I also think we've heard three different things today, and I'm curious which one he fits under. I like let it eat, right? Because I can just imagine, like, those players, like, we did this with let it eat.
We heard that one from Blowers, right? We heard Blowers say that he had to let it eat.
I even looking at the game tonight, as special it was, there was so many times tonight that Mike Zunino was sitting right in the middle of the plate. Elevate the glove. You know, just above his mask.
Yep.
And as you said, as Scott said, let it eat. Here we go. Big boy, come after it, including in the ninth inning. When that would be a time where you'd think, well, I'm going to nibble a little bit here, and if I walk a guy, I don't care, I don't want to lose. No, it was just the opposite of that. And we see 100 in the ninth. It was really special.
Yeah, he was letting it eat.
I kind of like that one, right? I don't know. I've always looked at Pax as a guy that likes to eat a little bit. We talked to him early in his career, too. You and I saw. We love to eat, right? Let it eat. Now, Mel just told you it is let it rip. That's what he wants. My dad used to say rock and fire. I've asked Titus the same thing. Like, what do you want me to say? Do you want me to say anything? You know, I kind of like, you know, my pops used to say rock and fire, rock and fire, rock and fire. And for James, it's you know, let it rip. That's what he likes to hear from Mel. But there's also this let it go. And I don't know why it's a frozen tundra up north.
Let it go,
you think that's what's blaring in his head last night?
I don't know. Just let it go, big boy. Let it go.
I don't think that this song and that no-hitter should be put in the same sentence together. Like, I appreciate what you're doing here, but...
Okay. You know what? Scratch it. Just get back to Thunderstruck.
Can you take that off? I don't...
If they were playing Thunderstruck with the champagne, just
we're not going to do that. All right, here's what we are going to do. Coming up here in about 10 minutes, we have a... Thank you. We have a poem from Lydia.
The Thunderstruck?
I didn't say that. I just said Lydia has a poem, an ode to James Paxton. We'll do that at 8:30. Immediately following that, John Stanton... Mariners chairman expected to call in.
Awesome.
If you miss James himself, we'll replay that at 9:30. So we've got a bunch of different things.
We're gonna
we also
back to
have
all
this.
Your
yeah, and I wanted to do this because, you know, it's not every day. I tried to talk about it with James a little bit, that a Canadian goes back home and throws a no-hitter. And so, you know, we've had our experience with the Canadian fans before. You remember them coming into Safeco the last True. Couple of years, apologizing to everybody, drinking all everyone's beer, spending money, and generally being incredibly nice to everyone along the way. We were able to go up to Toronto and get a report
from
one
Rogers?
Of the local news stations there. Yes, it's from Rogers Sportsnet. Okay. Here you go.
It was an incredible scene here at Rogers Center. One of our own, James Paxton, joined an elite group yesterday, becoming just the second Canadian ever to throw a no-hitter. Of course, every Canadian knows the name Dick Fowler, who threw one in 1945. His ice sculpture in Newfoundland is one of Canada's most popular tourist attractions, right behind the original Tim Hortons in Hamilton. And of course, next to the Fowler sculpture, a half-done Eric Bedard sculpture in memory of the 6 1/3 no-hit ball he threw before he tragically pulled himself from the game for no apparent reason. The scene leading up to the final out was remarkable. A chorus of apologies raining down upon Paxton for the lack of smiles the crowd had given him in the earlier innings. After the game, local tattoo parlors had lines out their doors with drunken fans demanding maple leaf tattoos on their forearms. All in all, a special night. Some have whispered that Paxton may now even be more popular than the last player on the Maple Leafs bench. But hyperbole does run rampant on social media. Back to you, Mike.
Wow, that was quite the report. A lot of apologizing going on in the background of that. Yeah, so sad. Those poor Canadians. They're just apologizing for everything. And that Eric Bedard half-finished ice sculpture must be quite the travesty. How are both guys Canadian? Like, James Paxton fits every single... He checks every box in the Canadian...
Humble.
Yeah.
Gracious.
The Canadian stereotypes.
Warm.
Eric Bedard is the opposite of all of them. He took himself
arrogant,
out of a no-hitter.
Pompous.
Just amazing. Just amazing. All right. Lydia's poem is coming up. If you're a fan of hers like we are, you'll get excited for this. John Stanton will join us, and we'll replay James Paxton for you coming up at 9:30. Quite a day, quite a night last night. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Seattle is alive for the Mariners. The excitement in Seattle is insane. It's insane. I'm thinking 87 and 75.
Wow.
And we're getting in on a wild card, baby.
Who isn't alive for the Mariners right now? James Paxton with the no-no yesterday. He joined us at 7:45 this morning. He was great. We'll replay that for you coming up an hour from now at 9:30. As this hour is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. So many cool. I just enjoy chatting with him.
Well, you get a Seager joke.
Yes.
You get a former, you know, what, Hall of Fame caliber pitcher that reached out to him that some have compared him to.
That would be Andy Pettitte.
And then you get to learn a little bit about the mechanics of a fake shake. I mean, you get all of that.
Fake shake.
Yeah, Paxton, pretty gracious.
You missed it. Stick around 9:30. You can hear what the fake shake really is. John Stanton, Mariners chairman, going to join us in just a moment or two as well. I'm sure to offer some congratulations to his big lefty. But you may remember right before the season began, our very own Lydia Cruz wrote a tremendous poem, an ode to baseball, an ode to the Mariners season beginning. It went viral. People loved it. It was read on the broadcast. Rick Riz basically was completely touched and blown away by what she had done. So in honor of the great no-hitter thrown by James Paxton last night, Lydia is back with her second poem, an ode to James.
10 species of maple trees call Canada home, like the Manitoba, the broadleaf, and the sugar, which is most emblematically known. Some reach for the sky while other shrubs remain lesser. All born of the Sapindaceae family. More importantly, the genus Acer. Ace, get it? But this poem is not about the red, the black, the silver, or a maple of any color. This ode is for the rarest of flora, one maple unlike any other. 30 years ago, its roots sprouted beneath the banks of the Fraser River. In Ladner, British Columbia, this seedling thrived despite some frigid winters. From BC PBL to Team Canada for Junior National, Little Maple became slightly bigger maple, and in 2006 went international. Only a rare breed can flourish in Vancouver and Kentucky, then Alaska for the summer, all while increasing his strikeout rate and, oh yeah, throwing an SEC tournament complete game shutout stunner. Now, believe it or not, this rare hardwood was once bound for Toronto. But thankfully, Mother Nature stepped in, intervened, and replanted that 6'4 frame firmly in Seattle. For 8 years, we've watched the Southpaw seedling evolve into a force of nature, making his way from background landscape to front and center must-see garden feature. And here we are in 2018, forecasted as the year of the maple. From eagle wrangling to 16 strikeout games to the grove becoming a Safeco staple. Now, I have no clue what sound a tree makes when it falls in an empty forest, but I can tell you the noise following a historic big maple no-hitter is internationally uproarious. And to think, he's ours, Mariners fans. James Alston Paxton, the one-man arboretum. So gather your maple syrup and your A-cards, friends. It's officially big maple season.
Pretty nice, Lydia. Well done once again. There you go.
Wow.
An ode to James Paxton, and let's turn to the guy who signs those checks for him. John Stanton taking a few minutes with us here, Mariners chairman, also on the Venue Kings hotline. Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm great. What a fantastic morning it is. Welcome from Toronto.
How sweet was that yesterday, John? From your perspective, take us in.
It was amazing. I'm actually up here on business and took a group of Canadian and American friends from our business to the game last night, having no idea what was in store. It was the roof was closed. They only had about 20,000 people in the ballpark. You know, it didn't look like an exciting game going into it. And, frankly, some of my Canadian friends aren't particularly baseball fans. And so one of them came up to me and, in about the sixth inning and said, how come Toronto doesn't have any hits yet? And I practically threw him out of the window in the suite. It was unbelievable that he would even utter those words in at that point. Seventh, eighth, ninth inning, it was very quiet in the suite. Everyone was focused. I, of course, kept score. And, I mean, I had never been to a no-hitter before. I had tickets to the August 15, 2012 perfect game, and I didn't make it to the stadium for that game for Felix's perfecto. So last night was my first no-hitter to watch, and what a thrill. Congratulations to Pax. Congratulations to the team. Congratulations to the whole city for having such an extraordinary event.
How much time have you spent chatting with James over the years?
You know, James is a quiet guy, but I've had a chance to get to know him a bit. Funny coincidence, he married a woman from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, which happened to be my dad's hometown. And so we talked a little bit about Eau Claire, which is a very small town. He's now built a home there and, you know, gotten to know him a little bit, but he's I think of him as the strong, silent type, quiet and unassuming. You know, the guy who's pumping his fist in the air with the maple to show off the maple leaf to the fans here, is not, you know, that's out of the ordinary, just as the evening was out of the ordinary.
You know, you said to us, John, on a couple different occasions in the studio with us twice, we saw you down at spring training, you said, this team really enjoys one another. The year three of building it, and there's more pieces back, and then you add in D, and you add in Ryan Healy, and you add in these guys. I would imagine last night, as chairman of this club, as you sat there and watched it, it was James, but to see such a collective effort and all of those guys playing for one another, that had to put quite a smile on your face as well.
It did, Brock, and It was very special, and I would add Ichiro to that mix as well. Even though he's not playing on the field, he was a very powerful force in the month of May, and he's working with the young guys as a special assistant now, and he's an important force. I don't think you can possibly overstate the significance of D. Gordon. You know, he is so electric and such a great personality. But the thing I look at in that clubhouse is we've got this balance between strong leaders. You know, Robbie is this, you know, constantly smiling, positive force in the clubhouse. Nelson is an incredibly powerful force, you know, both when he steps into the batter's box and when he's in that clubhouse. And you look at some of the kind of the next generation, the Seager, Zanino, Segura, and then the young guys they've gelled. Jerry's put together an unbelievable group of guys, and Scott's got them working together, and you know, some of the cultural dynamics with the costumes on the road and the pool table. I think it's been unbelievable, and I you're right, I do feel good about it. I gotta tell you though, I mean, the thing that those guys reacted to, the three games over the weekend against Anaheim, even though, you know, we didn't win the Friday and the Sunday game, you know, we had an average of 40,000 fans there, and that makes a difference. Yep. You know, it's frustrating to me, and I know we've got to earn it, but I feel like we are earning it. We only have 11,000 tickets sold for the first game that they're back against Texas on the 15th. You know, PAX is likely to pitch on Friday the 18th, and you know that we only have about 19,000 sold for that Detroit game. I think that this team is asking the community to come out and support them in person, because it makes a difference when the stadium is alive. It makes a big difference. You know, the plays like that diving catch Seager made that most third basemen don't make, that throw across that Healy picked, you know, that saved the no-hitter, the dive that D made, you know, when the fans erupt after those, that makes a difference. There's a spring in those guys' step. It makes a huge difference.
John, we appreciate it. It was a heck of a night last night. I'm glad it worked out for you to be in Toronto. Cool.
If I can have one more second, got to tell you one thing funny. I get up this morning, I turn on the local news, and you'd think Toronto won the game last night. You know, the fans were great. Yeah. They kind of muttered, you know, 5-0, you know, Mariners. And then they go on and on about how it's the first Canadian pitcher to throw a no-hitter in Canada and how proud we are that the Canadian pitcher beat the American pitcher, even though Stroman, you know, pitched for Toronto last night. So it's a rare accomplishment to have a no-hitter. It's an even rarer accomplishment that the team you beat or the fans of the team you beat can be so excited about the win.
That's the second news story right after whatever the Leafs have done in off-season moves that day in Toronto. Which of course is always number one.
And the Raptors losing
exactly
to Cleveland.
John, so. Thank you. Thanks, we appreciate guys. It. What a night.
Thanks for all your support, dude.
All right, there you go. There's John Stanton, Mariners chairman, joining us there in the Venue Kings hotline. All right, we're running a little late here. We didn't do Blue 42 this morning, Brock, at 7:45, so we're going to do sort of a late edition.
I'm going to do it fast.
Jump away from baseball for just a couple of minutes.
Fast.
And then get right back to it. The entire 9 o'clock hour. We'll see if we can have some open phone lines for you. And then at 9:30, we'll replay James Paxton, who joined us earlier in the show.
And if you like the little nuance here of the fake shake, I will tell you the football equivalent next in Blue 42.
Meritage Distilling's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. When you hear the side is retired, we're referring to those old guys taking shots of BSB at the side of the bar.
You can't spell baseball without BSB.
Meritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
Hey, this is Danny O'Neill from the Danny Dave and Moore Show. Thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. I'd really appreciate it if you checked out Danny Dave and Moore. We're kind of charming, very fun. It's every afternoon from 3 to 7. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
Blue 42. Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
All right, a late version of Coors Light's Blue 42. We had James Paxton during that time at 7:45. And you know what? He gets to blow everything out today. throw a no-hitter last night the way he did. Canadian soil, yeah, you get the opportunity to be on a place of Blue 42. If you missed any of that interview, James was great, and we'll replay it for you coming up at 9:30 this morning. Brock, three quick football questions for you. One is kind of iffy. James told us in that interview that the last pitch of the game was a fake shakeoff of Mike Zunino.
Yes.
What would be the football equivalent of a fake shakeoff?
Yeah, that would be a dummy call. And we did more of this in Indianapolis. Peyton was just the master of this in so many different ways, and he would often call it ice cream. So you come out after a play, you know, especially after a big play, you know, come right up to the line of scrimmage, and the team and the defense on their heels, and ice cream, ice cream, ice cream. And you get a little, you know, eating the ice cream, the bowl of ice cream, so everybody knew they were frozen. There's no play. There is no play. And I'm going to get up there, and I'm going to dummy audible, and I'm going to dummy call and make it sound just like one of the run plays that we've run, and maybe you get a jump off sides, and you get them further on their heels, or you get them to show their cards, and bam, you can get to the check, you know, when they're already reeling, to really take advantage of them. So that ice cream call to freeze everybody offensively, there is a little bit of logic every once in a while with football players, and to keep them all frozen so that you could see exactly what you wanted to see to take advantage of, yeah, they're kind of similar to that, to the fake shake that you'll hear from Paxton in more detail in 45 minutes.
All right, question number two. You mentioned the last couple days you would like the Seahawks to be the best in the league at play at run play action.
Yep.
How many quarterbacks are better than Russ at play action right now?
I think nobody. The stats tell you one, and it's truly remarkable because Deshaun Watson played half the year. It was after that Seahawks game, unfortunately for the Texans, he tore his knee at a Wednesday practice, was lost for the rest of the year. Deshaun, in his limited time, had 11 play-action touchdown passes. He was number one in the league. Russ was number two, I believe, tied with Kirk Cousins with 10. And that was, by the way, with Zippo run game, none whatsoever, and still was able to get to 10. Pro Football Focus Seahawks got a website or a Twitter follow, and a good one. It hit me right away when I sent that tweet out yesterday with Pro Football Focus stats and said, yeah, hold on just a second, though. From an efficiency standpoint, kind of playing to my point, Mike, 2012, 2013, 2014 at the apex, one of the very best top three in all the league was Russell Wilson and his play action game, and you've seen it dwindle and dwindle and dwindle in 15, 16, and 17.
Yeah.
Got to get back to that mark, and I firmly believe that in 18 if you're going to compete for the division.
All right, question number three. Talked a lot about being a backup quarterback. Obviously, it's a role you had and played under Peyton Manning, behind Peyton Manning. If you were playing today, we talk about quarterbacks in the league in a lot of different ways, but if you were playing today and we're still holding a clipboard, who would you like to be an understudy?
Yeah, I think there would be two that jump out. Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees.
Why Phillip Rivers?
Because he has just done it in so many...
You guys would connect in some...
Oh, he's got 9 kids, number
ways.
One. Yeah, he's working on number 10,
You guys
too.
Would have a couple of...
Yeah. Yeah, we would have a lot of
connection points.
Yeah, it'd kind of be like Kitna and Dilfer and Hasselbeck. Right. There would be some relatability there. He's also one tough sucker, man. That guy is there game in and game out, season in and season
you
out.
Wouldn't like him.
Yeah, I would like him
not
a lot.
If you,
yeah,
not
he's
if you
kind of feisty.
Him.
No, people
so.
Love him. And Drew Brees would be right there as well. Just a technician. And this really comes in light, Mike. And heck, if Paxton would have not thrown the no-no, you know what a lot of our show would have been today? We'd have been talking about Big Ben's comments of just not helping his understudy, not feeling like it's his role in any way to get Mason Rudolph ready to take his job and some of the complexities behind that. Instead, well, we've had the joy of talking about Paxton for 2 hours, and we will for 1 hour more.
All right, that's a late edition today of Coors Light's Blue 42. Did you see this from Peter Gammons about Ichiro? Have you seen this quote from Ichiro?
No.
So we'll get back to Paxton here in a second. We'll open up the phone lines even. But this comes from, I think it's a Peter Gammons article in The Athletic. He says, one morning in spring training, 2017, Ichiro was in the coach's room looking at his cell phone text messages. Ichiro told the coaches about one message he had just received from a number he didn't recognize. The guy said he'd gotten Ichiro's number from Alex Rodriguez and that he wanted to come meet him and study his stretching system. What's the guy's name? Asked one of the coaches. Ichiro scrolled to the end of the text. Some guy named Tom Brady. Who the bleep is Tom Brady? Said Ichiro.
Legend.
That is tremendous. That's last year. That's not like in 2002. That's last year. That is so funny.
That is great.
Ichiro and Tom Brady coming into leagues the same year, right? Both in 2001?
Yeah.
Was 01 Ichiro?
Brady was 2000 in the practice squad, but yes, 01 as far as you know, on an active roster. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Ichiro in batting gloves last night and wristbands again, bro. He was good. And he just heard the chairman talk about the chairman of the clubhouse just bolting out there and celebrating.
That's his special assistant he was talking about, you know?
No, that's true.
When he mentions Ichiro, that's not just anybody.
That's right.
That's John's special assistant he's talking to. Exactly. All right, let's do this. We're going to replay the James Paxton interview coming up at 9:30. So if you missed any of that, it was a great night, and we'll replay it at 9:30. We would also like to open this up to you guys for a few minutes. 206-421-3776. Your favorite moment from last night, and there were a bunch. I mean, obviously what happens at the very end when he completes it, but was there a moment for you that was especially great watching that game last night? There were some great defensive plays, some celebrating, some incredible pitches. There was a lot. So what jumped out to you most? 206-421-3776. We'll take some of your calls. We'll give you some of ours. It's next on Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.